Welcome to the show, The Metaphysical World. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I'm very excited about who I have as a guest. His name is Mr. David Icke, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. So, hi, David. How are you?
Hello, Nancy. I'm glad we can speak, because one of the hardest things about the job that I do is syncing English time with American time with four time zones and radio stations all over America, and your summertime and everything. It becomes quite a challenge.
I'm sure it does. I'm just glad that we got it worked out. So, I mean,
I'm really
on this show. So, David, I'd like to ask you some questions. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. First, I'd like you to tell our listeners, and I'm sure people know about you, but I'd still like for you to tell them a little bit about how you got started on your journey with doing what you do now.
Well, it's a long story. As briefly as I can tell it, I was a professional soccer player in Britain. Arthritis finished my career at 21. I went into journalism. I became a newspaper journalist and then a radio presenter journalist, then a television journalist, and then a television, what you call in America, anchorman. And then I started getting involved in environmental campaigning, which led to environmental politics. I became a national spokesman for the British Green Party, and realized, thanks to that experience, that politics is no answer to anything. It's massively part of the problem. And I then, in the late 80s, started to have some very strange experiences, which I now understand but didn't at the time, what you might call paranormal experiences. And this culminated in some extraordinary things that happened to me in 1990, particularly in Peru. And in effect, it just burst the bubble that people live in, the reality bubble, and or the reality box, however you want to symbolize it. And I started to realize that what we think is reality is a tiny, tiny fraction of all that is. And this awakening, if you like, led to what is now nearly 20 years of extraordinary synchronistic events in my life, which have led me to people and situations, events, and accounts and information in all its forms, which has given me a greater understanding of what's actually happening in the world, and indeed what the world is, an illusion in terms of its physicality, but also the fact that a very few people actually are controlling world events or massively influencing them anyway, with the goal of creating a global Orwellian state. And fundamental to this is the suppression of what we might call spiritual knowledge, because people who are awakened, who are in understanding that they are infinite consciousness, not the body they see in the mirror, are very, very difficult to control individually, let alone en masse, in terms of their behavior and their sense of reality. And so the suppression of that knowledge has been vital to the whole agenda of mass control. And this is a key reason why throughout history this knowledge has been suppressed, whether it was the colonial powers of Europe going into country after country all over the world and destroying or at least massively suppressing the native knowledge that carries these understandings, whether it's the Inquisition or whether today it's the reflex action ridicule of metaphysical existence, often never mind knowledge. All these things are vital to the agenda of control, because we have to be persuaded that what we see in the mirror is who we are, that we are our bodies, and that's it. And it's very important, I feel, that those who are involved and interested in the what you might call the spiritual side of things also turn their attention to why that knowledge has been suppressed all this time. Because, you know, we can try to let people see there are other explanations for life and who they are and the nature of reality and all that stuff. But what has made it more difficult for centuries has been this systematic suppression of that knowledge. And I think alongside the spiritual awareness, there needs to be at the same time an awareness of the forces, the techniques, and the basic agenda for the suppression of this knowledge.
I think probably most of it's been suppressed because they like the control issues and the control factors, and they like us all to live in fear. The problem is that a lot of people today, like yourself, like myself, and people who are kind of already awakened, they're refusing to live in this fear. And we are creating a lot of waves, and they don't particularly care for what we have to say or do. But as more people wake up, David, I think that there is a possibility that we can start helping the truth to really start to surface. I know now you wrote many, many books, and so I'm going to ask you some questions about each of your books because I find them all very fascinating with what you have said. So, I mean, one of my first questions that I'd like to ask you, are your books fact or are they fiction?
Well, they're certainly not fiction. I mean, I've spent nearly 20 years traveling to around 45 countries researching this. You know, I've not sat in a darkened room coming to these conclusions. They're as the result of hard research, and the forces that I've been talking about in terms of the synchronicity of my life has led me to information in all its forms, like I said earlier, but the information itself has been, you know, hard research. And so, no, I mean, this is certainly not fiction. In fact, if you sat down with a blank sheet of paper and wrote some of this stuff as fiction, I mean, even people would find it far-fetched and hard to comprehend, even if it was actually written as fiction. I learned a long time ago that fact is far more bizarre than fiction. The information has been put together. As I call myself, I'm a journalist, but I'm a journalist who doesn't have an editor. And therefore, what I find is what I write, and I don't have to go through these deal-making meetings where you can leave that in as long as you take that out. I just write what I find, and so it's been done journalistically, really, and so it's definitely not fiction now. Is every last fact, is every last T crossed, is every last I dotted in 100%? Of course not. I'm trying to uncover something that doesn't want to be uncovered, but, you know, is the vast overwhelming majority of it correct, and are the themes correct? Absolutely. After 20 years, I can say that with great confidence.
And I agree with you, you know, because I read some of your books, and I find them very fascinating because a lot of things that you have written about in my own visions, I've already seen stuff like that, and I thought, well, gee, maybe I'm just weird or strange, but I know that I'm not. But I would like to ask you about a couple of your books because you talk about the global conspiracy in your book.
Yep.
And you talk about people who are manipulating. And can you tell the listeners kind of who you think is doing the manipulating?
Well, I started out nearly 20 years ago on a journey. And first of all, I started understanding how the world's controlled today, the structures they use, the techniques of manipulation they use, and how it is possible for the few to control the many. And due to the structure they've created, it makes it possible. And then eventually, I was asking the question, obviously, well, when did this thing start? Because it was clear these structures of control were not created in a few years, or even a few decades come to that. And I started tracking back to try to find a start to this. Well, you can get very comfortably back to the time of ancient Sumer and Babylon in what is now, of course, the land of Iraq. you know, people think that this invasion of Iraq is just about oil. It's not. It's partly about oil. It's partly about control of the Middle East. But it's also right in there, fundamentally connected to the fact that that land of what we now call Iraq, or Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, is of great historical significance to the people who are within the upper echelons of this network of interbreeding families that I'm talking about. Out of Sumer and Babylon came a network of interbreeding families. They exist around other parts of the world too, but in terms of the core of the control today, the Sumerian connection is vastly significant. They eventually became the controlling force in Rome, in the Roman Empire. They moved up into Northern Europe. They interbred with elite family lines there. They were the blue bloods, the aristocracy, the royal families of Europe, as they became. And then when the people started to rebel against overt, in-your-face control by bloodline through royals, kings and queens, they massively moved into what I call today the dark superfessions, into the control of finance, politics, transnational corporations, media ownership, etc. And the big expansion across the world of these bloodlines and their control came with the colonial powers of Europe. I mean, the British Empire, of course, they said it was so vast the sun never set on the British Empire, which it never did. And so they moved into the Americas, the Spanish moved into, and the Portuguese moved into Central South America. The British moved into Australia and New Zealand and Asia and as far as China. And then came this sleight of hand between the dictatorship that you can see, colonial rule, which like fascism and communism, apartheid, whatever, is a dictatorship that you can actually identify and you can see it. And dictatorships you can see and you're aware of have a finite life, because eventually the desire for human freedom will rebel against that. It might take some time, but eventually that will happen. The greatest form of control is control you cannot see, especially control of people who actually think they're free, because they're sitting in a prison cell, but they can't see the bars. And what happened with the colonial independence that history records is that the countries moved out of the former colonies on the surface, but they left out there both the bloodline, the interbreeding families, and the secret society network which those families used to manipulate themselves into positions of power. And they've gone on controlling those countries ever since, including the United States. It's basically like a transnational corporation. The headquarters is in Europe, not the European governments, the center of the secret society web that I'm talking about. Now, from that European headquarters, the families dictate a global agenda, and that agenda is based on constant, incessant, and ever quicker centralization of power in all areas of our lives for a very simple reason. If there's a few of you and you want to control the many, then diversity of decision-making is your worst nightmare, because there's just too many points of decision-making for you to control them. What you want is to incessantly centralize control so fewer and fewer people are making decisions that affect more and more people, and this eventually becomes a global dictatorship. And so what has happened is that structure has been put into place of the headquarters in Europe. And then in each country, there is a network which acts like a subsidiary company of a transnational corporation. For instance, in America, there is a network fundamentally involving the Rockefeller family and many others too, but they are massively involved. And that network is there to control American finance, government, the politics in general, the transnational corporations, media ownership, etc. And they do that in line with the centrally dictated agenda. And this is why you find the same things changing in very different countries. At the same time, after 9/11, countries that have never seen terrorism and probably never will were introducing anti-terrorism laws of the same kind that were happening in America and Britain. Why? Because of this transnational corporation structure, which allows the center to dictate to a subsidiary networks to introduce the same agenda. This is how it's possible. This is how it's done. And these families, if you want to get deeper into this, they are human on the level that we see with our five-sense sight, with this tiny frequency range we call visible light that our eyes can access. But there are infinite other realities, dimensions of life, if you like, that are interpenetrating the same space that this world is penetrating, interpenetrating. It's like this world is like a holographic television station. And just as with television stations, you know, goodness knows how many television stations are actually in the space that I'm sitting in now. But my television will pick up whichever one it's tuned to. But if I press the zapper button, I can go to many other different television stations. But when I've left one and gone to another one, the one I've left doesn't cease to exist. It's still broadcasting. It's just that I'm not tuned to it anymore. So this physical body, this hologram we call the physical body, locks us in to this reality, into this frequency range, this television station, but within the same space or endless other television stations symbolically. And most of them we're completely not aware of because they're so different in frequency to the one that we're experiencing. However, as with a radio set, if you get frequencies very close to each other, you get what we call interference, where you get coming into each other's range. And there are frequencies, dimensions very, very close to this one, which actually can interact with it. And this is where a lot of the ghostly phenomenon and other so-called paranormal phenomenon comes from. And these families are hybrids in terms of their DNA. And everything is a vibrational field. Everything is a vibrational frequency. And DNA is vibrating at a certain frequency. It's vibrating collectively within a certain frequency range. That's why, you know, we see physical bodies and within this television station. It's because they are operating within the frequency of visible light that we can see. But individually, each DNA is subtly vibrating to a particular frequency for everybody, because it depends on our state of being, our state of emotion, you know, everything. And so these bloodlines, these hybrid bloodlines, which are talked about and featured in ancient accounts all over the world going way back, this hybrid DNA they have gives them a particular frequency resonance, and it is a resonance which synchronizes with entities that operate just outside of visible light. So that for the vast majority of time, we can't see them in the normal course of events. But what this particular hybrid DNA resonance does is allow a powerful connection between these particular bloodlines, these particular families, and these entities that operate just outside of human sight. In short, in simple terms, to use this age-old concept and theme that goes back as far as history, this DNA resonance, sympathetic resonance, allows them to be possessed more powerfully by these entities than the general population. And so when we look at these ruling families, when we look at the people that are in power, that are connected to these families, that have this hybrid DNA, we actually see through our eyes only that part of them, that level of them that resonates within visible light. And so when we look at them, we see human bodies. But just outside of the frequency range that we can normally access are entities that look anything but human. and they are using these bloodlines to manipulate this world, because of course you have to operate through an outer shell that is resonating within the frequency range of this world if you want to interact and influence it. If that was not the case, for instance, if I didn't have a physical body that was within the frequency range of this world, then I couldn't hold this phone. Because just like, it'd be like asking a radio broadcast to hold the phone. It couldn't, because the difference in frequency would be so great that the phone would fall to the floor. Of course it would. And so, these entities operating just outside of this reality are manipulating this world through these bloodlines, through these bodies. They're using them almost like genetic spacesuits, if you like. And because our eyes can only see the human level, we therefore don't understand quite understandably what the real game is and who the real controllers are. And but over the years, you know, like I say, in over 45 countries, I've met endless people from every walk of life you can imagine all over the world who've told me this same story of having this experience of and many experiences with these entities, which is have shown them that actually behind the human facade is something anything but human.
Mm-hmm. The families that you're talking about, are those the families that are considered the Bilderberg Circle?
Well, the structure that they have can be symbolized either as pyramids within pyramids, like Russian dolls, smaller pyramids within bigger pyramids, until you've got a pyramid that encompasses the whole of the banking system, the whole of the transnational corporations, which is actually transnational corporation if you go high enough, controlling political parties, the major ones that have any chance at government anyway. Or you can symbolize it as a spider's web, which is just as good, where you have a spider in the center of the web and then the strands going out. Now, the strands closest to the spider, they are the real exclusive, highly, highly secret secret societies, many of which are not even known about. But very close to the spider, you've got the Jesuit order, for instance. You've got Opus Dei. You've got the Knights Templar, the Knights of Malta, etc. And then you come out, you've got the Freemasons, and further and further out, you start to meet organizations like the Bilderberg Group, which is a gathering by invitation of politicians, military people, media people, and people like the Secretary General of NATO, all these people that vastly influence global events, they are brought together under this group, the Bilderberg Group, to have their secret off-the-record confabs and make their agreements on the way forward. And then you go, you get a bit further out, just a little bit, because they're fundamentally connected, a little bit further out from the spider, and then you start to hit organizations that actually interact with the public arena. There are groups that are known about, things like the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States, things like the Trilateral Commission, which connects America and Europe and Japan to common policies. So there are different strands in the web. Some of them are publicly known. Some of them are semi-secret. Some of them are secret. And then when you get real close to the spider, they are really, really in the shadows and very exclusive in terms of the people that are invited to be part of them.
Now, the race that you're talking about outside what we can't really see with our own naked eye, is that the reptilian race?
Yeah. It's very interesting, Nancy. You know, the more that I I gather this information, the more people, and people you wouldn't even think, are beginning to see that the apparently bizarre is actually true. I heard today, funnily enough, and I'm going to follow this up, a friend of mine who's he's a genius in terms of healing and science and the science of healing. It's just a genius. And he has a lot of very good contacts, one of whom is an ophthalmic surgeon who has studied literally thousands of eyes in detail throughout his long career. And he was saying the other day that he's found that something like 30% of the eyes that he's investigated, that he's studied, are actually reptilian in his view. This recurring theme is coming from many, many angles now. And, you know, people you wouldn't even think of are saying, well, actually, you know, I think there is something in this. And it's just a matter of opening your mind to a greater possibility. And instead of coming to something with a preconceived idea, which then edits information that is at odds with the preconceived idea, and we come and let the information be the guide rather than belief and preconceived idea, then it becomes very powerful when you look at the amalgamation of information that is available now about this reptilian connection, both ancient and modern.
Mm-hmm. The other question I have for you, you talk about the Illuminatis a lot. Can you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about them?
Yeah, the Illuminati are, if you like, the spider, or at least very the closest to the spider. What happens is, I've detailed this in my latest book, and I've got a graphic in it which details what I'm going to say. We have secret societies, and they have their levels of degree, and then they have their top levels, like the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry has 33 levels, and when you get to the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, you've reached the top. Well, actually, you might have done a Freemasonry, but you haven't at the structure. What happens is these secret societies feed a very few but highly chosen people through the top of their pyramid into a pyramid that they all funnel people into. And that's the Illuminati. It's the pyramid above the secret societies. And that's where the real action is, and that's where the real knowledge is. But even that Illuminati pyramid is fiercely compartmentalized. If you look at the characteristics that we get from the aptly named reptilian brain, the R-complex, as science calls it, the oldest part of the human brain, which comes from our reptilian heritage, it's very, very much, in terms of its characteristics, about structure, fierce structure, ritualistic behavior, not just, you know, sacrifice on a slab, though they certainly get involved in that, but ritualistic behavior in terms of it's very predictable, like the same, you know, in everyday life, it would be going to the store at the same time on the same day every week. It's very circular ritualistic behavior, but very structure obsessed and very hierarchical in terms of the structures that it's obsessed with. And what you get with the Illuminati are the classic traits in an extreme way of the reptilian brain. These people are extremely fiercely hierarchical, so that the smallest little grouping will be hierarchical. There'll be people that are above others, and indeed entry into the upper levels, at least the upper levels, possibly all of it, but certainly the upper levels of the Illuminati pyramid, which the secret societies feed into, is by bloodline only. And even these bloodlines have a hierarchy within themselves, which is fiercely policed. And the caste system in India, where your life is decided and your place in society is decided by your bloodline, in effect, by your birth, the family you're born into, that is extremely reptilian in its structure, and very much mirrors the way that these reptilian hybrid bloodlines operate. And if you look at the royal families of the world and the aristocracy and how a lord is above a viscount and, all this stuff, and how the firstborn is above the secondborn if they're a boy to become the one who's next in line to the throne. And it's all written down and structured, who's where in the hierarchy. This is absolutely classic reptilian behavior and reptilian thought, and the whole structure is like that. And everyone knows their place, which is by genetics. These people are obsessed with genetics.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think the Catholic religion is involved with either the Illuminatis or the reptilians?
Oh, massively so. But let me say again that because of the fierce compartmentalization they use, these compartmentalized pyramids where the vast majority in the pyramid are absolutely in ignorance of what's really going on, and only the few at the capstone of the pyramid know the real deal. The vast majority of people who are operating as Catholic priests, Catholic bishops even, have no idea of what that organization is being used for, in the very same way that the overwhelming vast majority of Freemasons in the world have no idea what that organization is being used for because of the compartmentalization of knowledge. And but if you follow the history of the Roman Church, which became the Roman Catholic Church, of course, it goes back to ancient Babylon. And this is why the Christian religion is the Babylonian religion under using different names, but basically it's the same. And indeed, the religions in general have the same source, and that's the sun god, moon goddess religions of Babylon and other places, but particularly Babylon because of the flow of, and history of these bloodlines, which I talked about. And it's no accident that in my latest book, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, I put a picture of an original depiction from the area we now call Iraq, from about 2000 BC, of the sun god and moon goddess symbolized against today's international logo or symbol for Islam, which is... The similarity between the two is ridiculous because they come from the same source, sun and moon, goddess and god worship. And so that's why when you look at the Babylonian trinity of Nimrod, the father god, Tammuz, the virgin-born son, and the female part of the trinity, Queen Semiramis or Ishtar, the Virgin Mother, when the Babylonian bloodlines moved in and created the Roman Empire, they also created the Roman Church, and they just relocated the Babylonian religion and the Babylonian Trinity under the name of the Father God, brackets Nimrod, Jesus, the Son of God, brackets Tammuz, and the Holy Ghost replaced Semiramis in the Christian Trinity, but the Holy Ghost was symbolized as a dove, which is precisely how they symbolized Queen Semiramis in Babylon. And what they did was take all the attributes that the Babylonian religion gave to Queen Semiramis, the mother goddess, and they gave them to Mother Mary. They call Mother Mary the Queen of Heaven. That's what they called Queen Semiramis in Babylon. They call her the Virgin Queen, that or the Virgin Mother. That's what they call Queen Semiramis in Babylon, and so on. And again, it's no accident that when they created the Mother Lodge of Freemasonry in London, which was the Lodge of Freemasonry established, I think it was 1717, that orchestrated the introduction of Freemasonry into the United States. They put that Mother Lodge in Great Queen Street in London, where it still is today. And Great Queen was the name that, again, the Babylonians gave to Queen Semiramis. And so when you had Virginia being created, and official history tells you it was named after the Virgin Queen, Queen Elizabeth I, it's a nonsense. That's a cover story. The Virgin Queen that they were talking about in terms of Virginia was the Virgin Queen of Babylon, Queen Semiramis. And this, for the same reason as I show in my books, the way they depicted Queen Semiramis in the ancient world with spikes around her head, etc., was a mirror of the Statue of Liberty. Now, the Statue of Liberty was given to New York by French Freemasons in Paris, who have a mirror of the Statue of Liberty on an island in the River Seine to this day. And the Freemasons of Paris knew exactly what the Statue of Liberty really symbolized, and it was the Babylonian goddess. And she's holding in New York Harbor a lighted torch. Now, in Babylon, the lighted torch was the symbol of Nimrod, the father god, the sun god of Babylon. And if you look at aerial shots, and I've got a shot in a new book about this, if you look at an aerial shot of the Statue of Liberty, she's standing on a depiction of the sun. All these things are relevant because the symbolism of these bloodlines has been taken with them right the way through the ages, from Sumer and Babylon to the present day, and they've put them all around us, telling us that this stands for liberty, and this stands for this, and this stands for the other, when they know that they're symbols of the Illuminati religion, the reptilian religion, that goes way back into the ancient world.
I'm sure a lot of people, as they're listening to you explain things, David, are going, how could all of this be possible? How could it all be happening? Why aren't people trying to stop it? You know, so in some of your other books, you know, one of them is called Intuitive Self Set You Free. But most people today, when they're given the truth, they don't either want to believe it or they don't even want to hear it. Is there a way to get people to understand all of the things that you were talking about are happening here now, and they're going to continue to happen until people stand up for their true right?
Well, the thing is, Nancy, if we get really down to it, the vast majority of humanity is in a hypnotic trance. That's why they don't get it, and that's why they don't want to see it. You see, the brain is constantly editing reality, and it edits on the basis of fear, and it's on the basis of belief system. I mean, if you put two people together, and I've seen television programs do this, if you put two people together who have very strong preconceived ideas of about each other, and then you let them talk to each other, and then you take them away individually, as these programs have done, and ask them what the other one said and how they said it, you realize that they're not hearing what the other one said or how they said it. They're hearing what their preconceived idea is editing and filtering them to believe and to hear about the other person. In other words, we are editing reality all the time, and you can see this in a hypnotist stage show where the hypnotist is implanting into the mind, into the subconscious, a belief in reality. And what happens is that people think that we taste with the tongue and we see with the eyes. We don't. The five senses are sensors that pass information to the brain, and the brain decodes it. We see when the brain has decoded it. We taste when the brain has decoded it. And so if you can intervene in that decoding process, you can intervene in the reality that the brain is decoding. And when you think about it, we have, for instance, a hypnotist, the world's greatest hypnotist, in the corner of most living rooms called the television. Again, it's no accident that when you're watching television, your brainwave state goes into that of a hypnotic trance, the same as hypnotic trance. And we're being fed versions of reality, a version of reality, basically, constantly. And we are therefore programmed to see the world in a certain way. And our minds then edit reality to fit the program. And this is why when someone comes out with something, and it's happened throughout history, or that is at odds with the status quo, that is odds with the prevailing version of reality, they are ridiculed, they're condemned, they're dismissed, and they get the same reaction throughout history. People who've done this have got the same reaction. It's because in some cases, people simply don't get it because their brain is editing reality, so they don't get it to fit the preconceived idea of reality that they have. And in some cases, the people get angry and hostile because they don't want to hear it. It's like they're like someone saying, don't want to talk about it, change the subject, because it's something they don't want to hear, because there are fundamental implications in it and for people in terms of the need to change. You know, people would much rather be told that a hurricane's not coming than a hurricane is coming. And therefore, the person who says, nah, the hurricane's not coming, he's more likely to be believed than someone who says, oh, I think there's a hurricane coming, because the person doesn't want the hurricane to come. So therefore, the most powerful way of persuading people about something is to tell them something they want to hear. I mean, you know, even, you know, door-to-door salesmen and salesmen in general are taught how to glean from people, their potential clients, what they would like to hear, and then they tell them as part of their sales pitch to get them on their side and to pull them in. And here is here are people saying the world is not the cozy place you think it is. It's you're not having an influence on it by having a vote at an election, because the same force gets in either way. The government is not there to protect you and look after you and serve your interests. It's actually there not just to control you, but to increase incessantly that control and increase control for your children and your grandchildren as time moves on. And so it's something that really people don't want to hear. But the way out of it is to become conscious and literally to wake up from the trance. You know, we talk about people waking up and suddenly seeing the world is different. Now, wake up is precisely what is happening. People say to me all over the years, so many times, I can see it now. Why didn't I see it before? It's so obvious. Because you were in a hypnotic trance before. Why does the guy on the stage in the hypnotist stage show think there's an elephant in the audience when there's not? Because that's what he's programmed to see. And so it's not even about moving on or learning something new. It's removing ourselves from the trance state so that we know what we already know, and we can access that knowledge and we can access that understanding. Because at the moment, because, you know, once the hypnotist has clicked his fingers, the guy doesn't see an elephant in the audience anymore. And that's what happens symbolically when people wake up to this information and to the full magnitude of who they are, consciousness. And it's about becoming conscious. I read an article recently about the intellect. I'll tell you why. It's quite a funny story, really. I was invited to speak at Oxford University, at the Oxford Union, which is a famous debating society going back to 1830 or something like that. And people like Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter and Henry Kissinger have all spoken there, and all these people over the years. And what I do when I do a public presentation of this, of over about 7 hours with hundreds of illustrations, I give people the whole story. Because people who come to my events do so because to some extent, or often to a very large extent, they have an open mind. They are open to look at things on their merits rather than have preconceived ideas. But when I'm going to speak at the most elite university in the world, so they claim, I'm sitting in my hotel room thinking, how do I do this in baby steps so they'll get it to some level? And why am I, to people of all ages and all backgrounds, many if not most of whom have never been to a university and not had this elite education, how can I give this information no holes barred, no problem, and yet I go to an elite university of world renown and I'm doing it in baby steps? Reason, intellect. Most people, not least because the system is there to create the situation, are imprisoned and enslaved by their intellect. The intellect is, in effect, the left brain, the left hemisphere of the brain that deals with language, structure, and can I see it, touch it, hear it, taste it? Okay, it exists then. And the intellect is fine in its place if we are also multidimensionally connected to much higher levels of our consciousness. And that those levels of consciousness can bring their wisdom, their understanding down into this physical world through the intellect, which can articulate in words, language, and this world concepts, these understandings that are coming from higher consciousness. That's fine. It has a part to play in doing that. But when the intellect becomes isolated from higher consciousness, it can become both a monster and extraordinarily ignorant, because the intellect, by its very nature, the left brain sees things in terms of apartness. It sees things in terms of complexity. The left brain is much more interested in the twig than the forest, put simply. And therefore, it can't get these bigger concepts of the connections between things, of the oneness of everything rather than the division of it. It cannot get its head around that because that's not its role in the multidimensional connection, if you like. But what the system has done is isolated people in their intellect. And I don't mean just people who are known as intellectuals. They have advanced intellects. The population in general might never have been to a university, doesn't even need to go to school, and it will still perceive reality through the intellect, through the left brain. And once we do that, then the system has got us, basically. And so what we need to do is get out of the intellect. And fundamental to that is instead of prejudging everything, instead of having a preconceived idea, which the intellect has a wonderful ability to have those, we just let the information be our guide, and we look at everything on the basis of the information and how credible it is, rather than saying, I'm dismissing that without any research because it doesn't fit my belief system. And unless we do that, unless we get out of the intellect and become what I call a bit more fully conscious, then this control will continue because it controls us through the intellect. And if you think about it, Nancy, to progress within this system, to become a doctor, to become a lawyer, to become a journalist, to become a top politician, to become often the people that lead industry and business, you have to have been very, very good at taking information overwhelmingly into the left brain and then regurgitating it back onto an exam paper at school and college and then university. And if you're good at that, in other words, you're good at passing exams, then you progress within this system, within this structure. And what it means is that when you get to the peaks of these pyramids that control, or not even the peaks of the pyramids, but the administrative level of the pyramids that control society, the people that control the medical profession, the people that control business, the people that control the media, people that control banking and finance and politics, you are invariably looking at people who are left brain prisoners, who are intellectually enslaved because they have shown that they are so by being very good at passing exams, which have led them to the top of the system. What we're looking at when we look at society is we're looking at the creation of intellect. That's what our society is created by, intellect. And, of course, it wants to defend its position and it wants to defend its power and control. And, therefore, it's always attacking anyone or any organization that is coming from a heart position or is coming from a higher consciousness position. And that's why those who have done that through the ages have been ridiculed or condemned by the system.
I have a really good question. I think it's a good question. I want to ask you, and I don't want our time to run out before I ask you. The children that are here now, most of the children are being prescribed for all of these drugs. Do you think that, and we'll put it in your terms basically, that there could be a drug conspiracy going on to keep these children so that they're zombies rather than have their own free will and their own minds, because they're highly advanced, but we're not allowing it.
Well, that's exactly what's happening. I feel for today's young people because they are being absolutely bombarded. I mean, the system is at war with them. You see, the physical body is a biological computer. It's not who we are. It's the vehicle we use to experience this reality. But it's an extremely advanced biological computer. So advanced, in fact, that it is actually like everything else. It is conscious. It has a consciousness. By biological, I mean, it's not just a computer that takes in information and then reacts to it as dictated by the programmer. It takes in information and then assesses it, responds to it. That's what things like the immune system are doing all the time. The body is conscious. This is something that is largely not understood. And it is a vehicle for consciousness to experience this reality. Now, of course, if you're a brilliant computer programmer, it doesn't matter how what a genius you are at that. If your computer that you're sitting at is not working properly, you are not going to be able to transfer your computer genius through that computer to where you want to express it. People say, oh, my computer's running slow. Oh, my computer's got a virus. Oh, there's something wrong. My computer's not working. So, okay, transfer your computer genius through that computer. Well, I can't make that. Exactly. And it's the same with the body. The body is an electrochemical, of course it's massively water too, but it's an electrochemical entity in terms of the way it overwhelmingly operates. So anything that destabilizes it electrochemically is going to have an adverse effect on its efficiency. And most importantly, its efficiency as a vehicle to express the will of consciousness into this reality. And so what we've got now is this war on the physical body. It's so multi-leveled. First of all, you're absolutely right with the drugs. We're now drugging children who are just questioning the status quo. Oh, he's disruptive. He's asking questions. They don't want to do it. But also we're being bombarded by food and water additives. Which are what? What are all these, E numbers and stuff? They're chemicals. I mean, if something, you go into a supermarket and something says something flavored, or something flavor, then there's nothing of the cheese or the onion or whatever it is in there. There is none. It's all a chemical formula to trick the brain into decoding it into the taste of whatever it says it's flavored. Monosodium glutamate, which is in goodness knows how many foods, is there to trick the brain into decoding more taste than is actually there. And monosodium glutamate, aspartame, this lethal sugar substitute, fluoride in the drinking water, all these things and many others are what science calls excitotoxins. They excite brain cells and destroy them. And the mobile phones, the electromagnetic soup that we now live in, we can't see it, but it's affecting us all the time. And even mainstream newspapers are starting to talk about it in this country. It's all destabilizing and imbalancing the body to stop consciousness expressing itself effectively into this reality, which they want to isolate this reality from other realities. And the jewel in the crown of this process, this war on the body, is the microchip. Because the body operates electrochemically, and if you can get a microchip inside the body, as a CIA scientist told me in great detail nearly, well, actually more than 10 years ago, once you get a microchip in the body, you can manipulate the body's electrical systems and therefore chemical systems, because the chemistry reacts to the electrical changes. And you can therefore manipulate people mentally, emotionally, as well as physically. And that's what the microchip is really there for. So there is a war on the human body, and because it's a war on the body computer to isolate it from higher consciousness, absolutely. And the more that people are awake, as you awaken, your DNA broadcast frequency changes as you awaken. It goes up. And, you know, there's a level of knowledge that the public see, and then there's a massively more advanced level of knowledge that operates in the secret societies at the highest levels of them and within the bloodline network. And they understand these things, and they can identify awakened people by their DNA frequency broadcast. And this is the key reason, among many others, why they want a global DNA database, because they can then get people's frequencies, and they can connect with people technologically, absolutely, on the frequency they're broadcasting on. It's like absolutely getting on the radio station that someone's broadcasting, and therefore being able to affect them most effectively. In this country, they can't get away with just introducing, yet at least, a national DNA database where people are forced to give their DNA. So this is how they're doing it. Every time someone is arrested for a crime, however minor, like some kids a few months ago were arrested for building a treehouse in a tree, the police have now, by law, the right, and they take that right, to take their DNA. Now, this is not when you're charged or when you are convicted. It's when you are arrested. And if you are subsequently not charged or not convicted, they don't destroy the DNA, they keep it. And there's nothing by law that anyone can do about it. So, and people say, why are they obsessed with getting this DNA database? No, it's not to catch criminals. That's just the excuse. It's to get the DNA frequency and the bloodline, too, of every human being. And now what we're seeing in Europe is the European Union is now making agreements with Britain to share the European database with Britain and the British database with Europe, and the whole idea is to have a global database of every man, woman, and child eventually.
Yeah, and it's very scary. And the thing that really baffles me, and we've been talking about the entire time, is why people don't want to wake up. It's like, you know, when I do my readings, David, you know, I tell everybody, you got to remember, you're creating an illusion here, and what you're seeing in is an illusion, and it's time for you to come out of that illusion and get a little bit more into what is real here. But people are so afraid to let go of this illusion, and it's horrible because people like yourself, people like myself, and people who are like us are having the hardest time trying to get the people to understand. Like, I have a nonprofit organization called the Child's Miracle Mind. And I started it for the purpose of helping get these children off these prescription drugs by using all our ancient knowledge, wisdom, and techniques that we've had forever so they can actually be who they are without the drugs. And people are fighting it left and right. And it's like, come on, you know, wake up with what they are doing. And it's very hard because people are so afraid of anything and everything that they need to start to get brave and they need to start to wake up, or, you know, they're looking at a very sad state that's going to be continuing to go on with this world, unfortunately.
Well, they're frightened of the unknown, and they're frightened of change, because change means going into the unknown. And this fear of the unknown is one of the greatest forms of enslavement. But when you do wake up, I'm not frightened of this. Why am I not frightened of this? Because I'm infinite consciousness. And when you move into this understanding of who we are, rather than the illusory idea that we're Charlie Smith or Ethel Jones, you actually move out of fear, because you realize the power you have to control your own reality, and you realize that there is no death, that this reality is an illusion which we create, which we decode. And the Matrix movies were very accurate in terms of the basic illusory reality they symbolized. Being awake is a wonderful place to be compared with being in the trance. And so there is absolutely nothing to be afraid of. In fact, quite the opposite. And if people could just understand that, then they wouldn't be frightened of the unknown of change, because change is challenging, because you have the breakdown of the old self. And that can be, quite painful and quite challenging, to say the least. But, you know, the breakdown of the old self, the illusory self, is crucial to allowing the real self to express its genius and its knowledge and its awareness and its love and all these things. And the breakdown of the old self is absolutely worth the challenge that it brings, because of all the benefits and the wonders that come from that. If I had the chance, what I've got in my mind as I'm speaking here, where, I don't know, it's just coming to my mind, I can see the scene from The Matrix, the first Matrix movie, where the guy who dobs them in, if you like, to the agents, and he's sitting around a table in a restaurant, and he says he wants to be plugged back in the Matrix and forget everything that he's learned about the reality, and he wants to be an actor, he wants to be someone famous, he wants to be someone rich. If someone said to me, we can plug you back in the Matrix, and you can forget all you've learned, you don't have to do what you're doing anymore, and you'll just forget about it, and you'll just be also, I'll bet you someone really rich and famous, and that'll be great. I just tell them where to shove it. I would never go back to before I woke up. I mean, it's unthinkable. I mean, a nightmare. So anyone who's frightened of going with this, please don't be, because it's wonderland compared with where you are now.
In that movie you're talking about, the last message of the very first Matrix, that last, the message where Keanu's standing in the phone booth, that is one of the best messages, and most people didn't understand it. It was like too new for their concept. But it was one of the best messages about waking up.
The reason they don't understand things like that is because they're stuck in the intellect. And the intellect will not understand things like that, because it is so full of structure. I mean, when I was at Oxford University a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to these two students. They must have not been 17 or 18, no more. And neither of them could even conceive of a society in which the government wasn't in control of the people. Not even a government acting as a coordinator for the benefit of the people. They couldn't even get that far. They couldn't see a society or conceive it unless the government was in control of the people. And these were intellectual kids, because they are enslaved by the intellect. They cannot get it, because the intellect cannot get it. And until they break out of the intellect into other levels of their consciousness, they'll never get it. And most people are enslaved by the intellect, and so most people don't get it. And if anything can bring down the awakening to the simplest terms, it's breaking out of the intellect. That's what the awakening is, because once you break out of that, you go to levels of consciousness that can look at everything from another point of observation and see what the intellect sees in a totally different light, from a totally different perspective, to see it instead of apartness and division. They see everything, you know, the higher consciousness sees everything as one. They sees how everything connects. And it's a completely different way of looking at the world. But unless you get out of the intellect, you can't see it.
Yeah, in your book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, the quote that you used by Albert Einstein was great. And it was, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. That really describes the whole kit and caboodle here.
And there's another a great quote from Einstein. It's quoted in different wordage sometimes, but basically it says this: you cannot solve problems with the same level of consciousness that created them. And this is why the world just goes round and round and round, following problems with more problems. It's because, for instance, you've got the Republicans in at one point, and they create problems, and then the Democrats come in and to solve the problems, and they create more. Why? Because the Democrats are operating at the same level of consciousness as the Republicans. And what is that level of consciousness? Here we go again. It's the intellect. And unless we break out of the intellect to higher levels of consciousness, we can never solve the problems created by intellect, because intellect will just go on trying to solve its own problems and create more, because it's the same level of consciousness that created them. It's real simple. No, wake up, world doesn't change. Wake up, world is transformed.
Again, I agree with you, David. It's very important. There's a couple more questions. I know we're running over time, but I just really like asking you a few more questions, if that's okay with you.
Uh-huh.
Okay. In your book, The Biggest Secret, you've talked about the murder of Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, you know, they are starting to believe that it is possible that it has been a murder. But there's still a vast majority of people that are having a hard time believing that the queen and all those people would have anything to do with it. But your theory is that she was murdered.
Yes. I mean, you see, again, I say this to people many times. If you judge what other people would do by what you would do, then you've lost the plot. Because not everyone's like you. And one of the really telling characteristics that I've observed so often of these bloodlines is that maybe it's for genetic, in other words, vibrational reasons. I don't know, but probably. They do not have the most important thing in terms of balancing human behavior, and that is empathy. If you have empathy with others for the who are suffering the consequences of your actions, and you have empathy with those, the way they feel from experiencing those consequences, that is going to affect your behavior, because you're going to have this emotional empathetic connection to the to other people. If you remove that empathy so that you don't have any emotional consequence whatsoever for what you do, then there are no limits. You can kill 3,000 people on 9/11 and have no emotional consequence whatsoever, because you have no empathy with the victims and you have no empathy with the families of the victims. And so people like the British royal family are extremely cold-blooded, as these bloodlines are, in terms of their behavior. They don't have this empathy. And the royal family, like the Clintons, and the Bushes, my goodness, the Bushes, have a long, long history of removing people who are a problem to them. And I'll give you an example. I was invited to meet some members of the House of Lords in London, Houses of Parliament, some years ago, about 1998, I think it was. And I was having a chat to them, and there was a woman there who started to say some very interesting things about Princess Diana and her death. And afterwards, I said to her, that was very interesting. how do you know about that? And she said, well, my best friend was Diana's best friend for 9 years. They fell out about a year before she died. And this lady of 9 years friendship with Diana was called Christine Fitzgerald. She was an alternative healer in London at a place called near Regent's Park. And Diana, and publicly and acknowledged by the media, she used to go to this Christine Fitzgerald for healing. And what happened was that what were described to me as friendly people in MI5, the domestic version of the CIA in Britain, were using this healing center as a place to leave messages for Diana to pick up when she came for healing. And Diana was, and I was told this in 1998, this is long before the letter revealed by Burrell, the Diana's butler, Paul Burrell. I knew back in 1998, I think I put it in The Biggest Secret, that the MI5 friendly people were warning Diana that there were people who didn't have her best interests at heart, and that they were planning to do her harm. And then Christine Fitzgerald said to me, when I met her eventually and talked to her at length on tape, she said that one day Diana came into the healing center in an absolutely distraught state and uncontrollable tears, saying they killed him, they killed him, they killed him. And it took some time for Christine to calm her down, she said. What happened is when the marriage with Charles broke down, Diana had a relationship with her bodyguard called Barry Manicky. And Barry Manicky died in a motorcycle accident. And it was portrayed in the media as just that, an accident. But actually, he was murdered. And he was murdered by the royal family, not literally by them, but on their orders. And when Diana had calmed down and Christine said to her, "Who they killed who?" Diana told her the story of what had happened that day. When she, by this time, this is after Manicky's death, she was having a relationship with an army captain called Hewitt. And she said what had happened is that Prince Charles's chief detective had gone to Diana and said that the relationship with Hewitt had to end, or Hewitt would end up like Barry Manicky, and she should saying to Diana, you should understand that you're not indispensable either. So it dawned on Diana from this that they had actually killed Barry Manicky, which they did. They garrotted him with a wire across the road, took him off his bike. And so these people are taking people out all the time. So are British intelligence, who work on behalf of the Crown, not the people. And so taking Diana out, because for many reasons, not least of which, she knew where the bodies were buried, if you understand, and she knew so much about the royal family that would have destroyed them. And she gave a interview with the BBC Current Affairs program called Panorama, the famous interview in which she spilled the beans on the whole relationship with Charles and Charles's relationship with Camilla Parker Bowles while he was supposed to be married to Diana. And she showed in that interview that not only did she have all these secrets about the royal family, but she was quite prepared to publicly reveal them. So she had to go. There were other reasons too, but that was certainly one of them. So she was removed. And it's just one in a long, long catalogue of assassinations that the royal family and the British establishment have been involved with, as have the American establishment.
Yeah, the Kennedy assassination was, you know, pretty bad, and people keep wondering why that really happened. And I'm not sure if anybody really has come up with the real reason why they did the Kennedy assassination. Do you have a thought about that?
Well, one thing I've learned over the years is there's never, or very rarely, one reason for anything. The thing about Kennedy was that he was doing things that, although, you know, he came from a bloodline family, the Kennedys are absolutely one of these bloodlines, but these bloodlines argue among themselves incessantly. But when these arguments and battles for control of the, you know, within the network reach a point where it's affecting the agenda, then the real top of the pyramid steps in and bangs their head together and puts an end to it. But there's a lot of squabbling and arguments goes on, because when you're in a state of mind of desiring power over others, then you also want power over those that are on your side. And this is where a lot of the wrangling comes from, the battle for power within the network. So these bloodlines argue among each other and sometimes take each other out. And Kennedy was, the Kennedy family certainly one of these bloodlines, but he was also doing things that were at odds with the agenda. He wanted to pull out of Vietnam. He wanted to make radical changes to the CIA. He wanted to introduce a form of interest-free money and other things too. And he was also going for organized crime through his brother, Bobby. And organized crime produced a lot of the money through his father to fund his election campaign, and they felt absolutely double-crossed, as they say. So there are many forces that were wanted rid of Kennedy. But, I mean, you know, got time to go into this now, and it's a very deep thing anyway, but they also do a lot of ritual killings in ritual places. Because they're very, very ritualistic and very obsessed with ritual. And, you know, Dallas, Dealey Plaza was the scene of the first Freemasonic lodge in Dallas. It's quite an important place within secret societies and Freemasonry. Of course, they've got the Trinity River close by. Trinity is one of their code words. And then you look at Diana, and according to researchers in Paris, where the Pont d'Arma tunnel is the site of an ancient ritual chamber where the Merovingian bloodline, which was fundamentally connected to this reptilian bloodline, the Merovingian bloodline used to do their rituals to the goddess Diana. They were goddess Diana worshippers because, you know, just outside the original Paris as it was, they did their rituals, and that scene is now the Pont d'Alma tunnel. And Pont d'Alma means bridge or passage of the moon goddess, which is what the goddess Diana was, the goddess of the moon. Because the goddess Diana is an ancient goddess going way, way back, and was probably a version of Queen Semiramis, the moon goddess of Babylon. So there are many levels to this, and on top of the Pont d'Alma tunnel, where people take their tributes to this day, their flowers and stuff, is a massive depiction of the flame held by the Statue of Liberty, standing on a black pentagram, which is, of course, extremely satanic symbol. So there are many, many levels to this. How deep does the rabbit hole go? I'm still going down it for a start, and I'm nowhere near the bottom.
The other thing I'd like to ask you, and then we're probably going to have to go, but I just don't want to let you go just yet. They have a lot of cover-ups with UFOs.
Yeah.
Now, in Britain, especially, there's a place there that they've released a lot of pictures and stuff, and they really have not been able to quite debunk this, and I can't remember the name of the place. It's something wall. It's a hidden base that's next to a forest.
Mm-hmm.
Brent, I think it's called Brent something Forest.
Don't know. It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. It was back in 1989 that all the sighting was going on. They just started to release it with the cover-up. with the UFOs. Why do you think the governments are doing that?
Well, there's two levels to this. First of all, there's a cover up because they don't want us to know that there are non-human activity around this planet, as that has been going right back in history. But there's another agenda, which is to eventually reveal the extraterrestrial connection with a view to creating a great fear and the need to pool resources militarily and intelligence and financially to meet the threat from beyond. I mean, there are documents that talk about this. And when they start revealing, and then they will, there has been extraterrestrial UFO activity, and we've not wanted to reveal it till now because we didn't want to create mass panic, but we have to say that it's now reached a level that we really do have to tell the people what's going on. We have to be very, very careful at what is then offered to meet the problem of the alleged extraterrestrial threat. Because when you want to create global change and global centralization through the technique that I call problem reaction solution, create the problem, get the people in fear of the problem, then offer the solution to the problem, then you need a global problem to offer a global solution to. And so we have a gathering array of quote global problems. One is the global threat of terrorism, so we have to come together and have international law. Of course, what's that? That's the law that everyone on the planet has to obey. International law to meet the threat of terrorism. We've now got this massive scam called global warming caused by carbon emissions when it's caused by changes in the sun. Because it's the carbon emissions has been, I'm not saying pollution is a good thing, it's just not causing global warming, because the carbon emissions story has been sold to people, international law is being more and more pressed to be the solution to the problem of global warming. Again, a global problem, and then you can have global solutions to it. And, of course, a threat to the planet from an extraterrestrial source would be the ultimate global threat, which needs a global solution. So it's very important. You know, it's about coordinates. Once you know where they want to take us, which is a centralized global state, and the methods they're using to take us there, which is create the fear and then offer the solution to the fear, then you can start to see the world in a news stories in a very different way. And the question to keep asking is who benefits? Who benefits from me believing what these people are telling us and wanting us to believe? And invariably, the answer to that will be anyone who wants to centralize power and justify more destruction of freedom.
Sad, sad state. Have you ever heard of the Dove reports?
Yeah.
They send them out. There are many members to that, and they talk about the white knights that are fighting against the Illuminatis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that?
Well, I think there are forces around the world, not all of them public by any means, who are aware of the sort of information that I'm talking about, and they are in their own way seeking to challenge the Illuminati agenda and to mitigate its effect. But in terms of the detail of that, I don't know. I just focus on gathering more and more information and communicating it. And if anyone else in the shadows or otherwise is trying to challenge this gathering control, then, more power to them.
Yeah, that would be true. With all the knowledge that you have, David, and the way that you constantly keep yourself out there and with the books that you write, have you ever been in fear of your life?
No, because I can't die. My body can, but I can't. So, you know, it's a bit of, fear. The fear of death is one of the foundation fears from which all other fears come. And I don't fear dying. And so I don't fear them doing anything to me. The other thing, too, is that, if it was simply a case of coming into this reality and then these forces could take you out, then there'd be no point in coming and trying to communicate this information. There are other forces at work, too, far more powerful than the forces of manipulation and control. And, we need to understand that those forces are around protecting people from what would otherwise be a simple case of removing them. And I have no doubt those forces are around me, otherwise I probably wouldn't be here now. I have no fear of any of that. I've come to do a job and I'll complete it and then I'll go home. No one's going to stop me doing that, at least of all these rather silly, imbalanced, disconnected people who have an obsession with having power over others to feed their own unbelievable levels of insecurity.
That's great, and I'm glad to hear that. The name of your new book, David, could you tell us what it is?
It's called The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, and then brackets and how to end it. And it's a amalgamation of all the most relevant information that I've gathered over 20 years. It's about 600 pages. It's a massive work of dot connecting, because you can see the world is apparently complex and bewildering, but when you connect the dots, it becomes a simpler world to understand. When you connect the dots between apparently unconnected people, places, events, information, you can see that there is actually a very simple structure to it all behind the apparent complexity as it plays out in everyday life. And there's nearly 300 illustrations as well. So it's the biggest book I've ever written. It's the biggest book I will ever write, because from here on I'm going in not another direction, but a leap forward in the direction that I've been heading, and that's into the deep into the realms of consciousness, understanding reality, and the nature of this reality that we think we live in. That's where the answers lie. In understanding that is to understand how to change that from a prison, which is rapidly becoming, to the paradise it once was and will be again.
That's really great. The last question I have for you, Dana, is would it be possible to have you on another show?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm, but it's a good thing, you know, I'm kind of snowed under with talking all the time, yeah, sure.
That would be great. Now, are you going to be coming to the United States to do any lectures or anything?
Not in the near future. I've done so many over the years, and I'm now, you know, I just go with the flow of where life takes me, and where it's taking me now is eastward, to places like Japan, which I've just come back from, and I'm talking in Italy and Britain in May as well. And I've been operating kind of in Europe and Britain and the East more recently, but I do feel that I'll be coming back to America in quite a big way towards the end of 2008 and 2009. So that's when I'm aiming to do a lot more over there.
That would be great. I think we need all the help you can give us, actually.
We all need that.
David, it has been great talking with you. I know that I went a little over, and I'm sure that everybody who's listening really enjoyed it. And I don't know if people called in to ask questions, but I was just kind of listening to you too much, and I didn't want to interrupt you. So next time we have you on a show, we'll actually be able maybe to open the phone lines and have other people ask questions that, you know, they
sure.
may have of you. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that'd be great, of course.
Okay, what will happen is that Marie will probably get back in contact with you, and you maybe give her another time schedule for us, and we'll kind of work from there, if that's okay.
Okay.
Again, David, thank you very much for taking the
time.
Thank
you very much, Nancy. Very nice talking to you.
You too. You take care. And like I'd like to thank all the listeners out there who have been listening. I'm sure there's a lot. And I hope that everybody has learned some things, and I hope that you start waking up and start to believe exactly what you've heard today. So with that, may God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk later. Take care. Bye now.